Welcome back to the show. This episode, you need to listen to the very end. You need to soak up all the information in this episode. If you sell vintage, if you sell anything, if you resell anything, if you hit the thrifts, you got to listen to this episode. It's super, super valuable. I have Chris of Daily Refinement on the show today. Super stoked to have him. I am part of his group. He runs a resellers group, focused mostly on eBay, but it's a really cool group, supportive. And he has done millions of dollars selling on eBay. He's done millions of dollars selling on live platforms. He's just makes millions with the group. So this guy makes millions doing whatever he does. And it was a really cool chat, really cool to pick his brain, get some insights. And you just need to listen to the end of this episode. Okay, but before we jump in, I got a couple announcements. Last week on the episode, I ran a contest in the chat, and I'm going to announce the winner. The question on last week's episode was, where are you listening to the show? Wrong answers only. I'm giving the win this week to Alex Gutierrez. Okay, Alex, hit me up on Instagram at Drew Heifetz in the DMs. I will send you your credit to fasinfrankvintage.com, all this cool product behind me. His answer was, I'm listening out of Mystery Town, USA. Population, forget about it. Okay? If you tuned into last week's episode, that one makes a lot of sense. But I have a runner-up. I have a runner-up on a runner-up for winner, but you don't get nothing. I'm just going to say your answer. Jordan Schmidt, I listen in the basement of the Vintage Miner. He has me trapped down here, forcing me to learn about vintage so he doesn't fall behind. Help! Okay, you're the runner-up, Jordan Schmidt. This weekend, I'm running the same contest, guys. $100 store credit to anybody who can make me laugh in the comments, basically. Actually, no, this is not even to make me laugh. This is just answer. I'm going to pick a winner. This week's question is, what is your craziest vintage find of all time and where you found it, okay? Or how you found it. That's what we want to know in the comments down below on this week's episode, and you're going to win $100 store credit, okay? I also need to give a shout out to a bunch of the new Patreon members. Thank you guys so much for signing up. There's been some changes to the show. If you want to get the full 2-hour episode, this episode is also over 2 hours. You can jump on the Patreon. It's only $5. And there's 4 episodes a month, so that's $1.25 per episode, guys. It's very cheap, but it helps out so much. Get this show made, produced, hosted, all that shit. Yeah, Patreon link down below if you want the full version of this show. If not, keep listening, keep tuning in to the 45-minute free version with Chris of Daily Refinement. This is such a good episode. So that is it. Without further ado, let's get into this week's episode with Chris of Daily Refinement. He is refining himself daily to turn whatever he does into millions. You guys need to listen to this. There's so many good tips and tricks. Enjoy the episode. Chris, welcome to the show. Thank you for joining me.
It's a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
So, Daily Refinement is your name, your kind of persona that you put out there to the world via your socials and your YouTube. That's kind of your world.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm sure a lot of people already know you from that. You're pretty known on YouTube. You have 150K subscribers, which is pretty hefty. I want to dive into that later in the episode.
Sure.
I'm also on your mentorship group, I guess you could call it, your podcast group, where you guys run like a very eBay specific and, you know, I must say very helpful group that I've been a part of for a couple months now, and I've found a lot of value in it already. I want to jump into that topic.
Yep.
But usually I think the best place to start is like, we want to know like your history. We want to know like how you became who you are today and what was your intro into reselling and how it all began for you. And one thing I will say is like, you're not, you know, I love having people like yourself on the show because you're not super pigeonholed into vintage. Vintage isn't really your thing. You are just a broad reseller. And I think it's good to get that cross section. You obviously know about vintage, but you're not like pigeonholed in that world. So yeah, give us your like your intro into reselling in general.
I love it. So now I'm primarily selling on Whatnot. I have a couple of employees. I have a little warehouse. And so I think I've run the full gamut. When I first started, I watched YouTube and I was just walking around playing Pokemon Go and I was outside. And I live in California, so I was like driving over to San Francisco Pier because they said that there's water Pokemon there. So I'm playing, and I realized you could sell the accounts on eBay because people who don't live near water had no water Pokemon, and this is before the age of bots and all that automation. So you could sell accounts of water Pokemon.
You got to clear that up for people. So you're telling me the game allowed you to sell like your the water Pokemon.
So what I posted was, I will sell you an account with X amount of water Pokemon, or you can give me your login and I will catch water Pokemon for you.
And wow.
I was charging $70 for that service. And I think 100 people signed up a day. I thought I was going to be a Pokemon trainer for a living. I was walking around with all these iPads attached to my hotspot and just catching Pokemon all day. And then it only lasted about a week before people figured out how to spoof their location. And then you could be in Ohio and catch Pokemon in San Francisco, and then it went away. But I didn't expect it to last. I was just doing it for fun. And, you know, I've been selling on eBay for a long time, just not as my profession.
Yeah. So what was the first things you sold on eBay then?
So I actually... In 2007, I lived in New York City, and I had a friend from Hong Kong that his family made the bubble in the Air Max. So he had a lot of money, and he was like, let's flip shoes. You live in Harlem. In Harlem, there's the House of Hoops. It was the first House of Hoops. Now they're in every single Foot Locker. But we would basically wait in line, get shoes, flip them. I did that in 2007. We flipped a couple thousand pairs that year, and then he went back to Hong Kong, and I didn't resell again. Until 2014, when I did the Pokemon thing. In 2016 was the Pokemon thing. And I knew that wasn't going to last. So I went online and was looking for what to sell. And I ran into all the OG resellers talking about what they sold. And I lived right next to a Savers. So I would go every day and look at puzzles. And as I call it, I was an everything seller. I was selling everything because that's what I was told. Sold a whole bunch of stuff. It was very, very fun, interesting. I remember finding bugs and electronics. I remember how complicated clothing was. I learned about the Goodwill bins at that point. And the first time I went, I found those vintage Apple shoes that I ended up selling for $3,000 that I got for a quarter at the Goodwill bins and a Gaylord of shoes. I didn't even know it was valuable. There were no comps on it, so I just threw it in my closet. And then a pair showed up on Heritage Auction for $15,000 like several years later. And I just had Apple shoes, which I learned that Apple only issues clothing to employees. They don't have a store for their clothing. So it's like, I've been doing this. And then at that time in 2016,
so how did you sell those shoes? Was it an auction?
I sold it on Poshmark. It's so random. I had them on eBay and Poshmark, and somebody offered $3,000 on Poshmark, and Poshmark had an authenticity guarantee. So I said, let's do it. And then they authenticated it and went to the buyer. They were happy. And mine were beat up. They weren't new, like the one on Heritage Auction that sold for $15,000. But
you also got to think too, like the value on a Heritage Auction that's like been marketed heavily.
Yeah, definitely.
It's not always the same as something you're going to sell on eBay. And yeah, people sometimes get fucked up in that world, you know?
Definitely.
What I mean?
And the provenance was right. Like, I found it in Millbrae, which is where that pair of shoes would have been. And it was, the shoe was made by Reebok. So Reebok made that shoe. It looked like an old school Reebok. They just put the logo on it for Apple, sent it over. So like, and there's no reason for this to be fake. But anyway, we can go into the conversation about fakes later because there's all kinds of topics on that. But
yeah, totally.
In 2016 and 17, I learned a lot of this stuff from Reezy Resells. And he was like, you should get on the YouTube. So I went on the YouTube and started sharing. And for like the last, from 2017, 2016 till 2020, I sold everything. Very, very scatterbrained, squirrel brain. My whole history on YouTube is me trying all these different things without a plan. And I feel like a lot of people start that way, but now there are resources online where you don't have to make all those mistakes. And over those the course of those years, I created the partnership with Tech and Sports to create the Resar podcast membership, the Nirvana podcast membership. And that's been amazing. There's a couple thousand people in there. You're in there.
Yeah.
And totally. I've learned, like, this is a real business. It's not just like a hustle where people can make, you know, make a little cash here and there. You can, you know, but like just even today, one of my YouTube videos, people were saying, it's not fair. You're talking about listing the same thing, which is much faster than what I do, listing something different every day. And I'm like, that's the point. You don't have to list something different every day.
Well, and I think too, like, you know, when everybody looks at someone like you or anybody else reselling online, they always love to make the excuses of the things that that person has that they don't have, or like, but they have that, or they're a different country than me, so they get all this thing, or they're down south where they can get all this stuff. And it's like, you can make excuses for anything in life. In reality, you know, it doesn't matter, but you got to live beyond those excuses and figure out your own thing and just go make it happen. And I love that about you guys in your group, because there's a lot of like factual knowledge based tricks, tips, all those things, like those are there. But then there's also just a lot of motivation, because you have like, you guys, there's so much of this like consistency motivation that, you know, that is more important than all the fucking bullshit, because like,
it's crazy,
you know, like if you could just put your head down and commit and do it, it's, you know, and again, like back to the excuses, get rid of the excuses, you know, figure it out and do it.
I think that's
a
good place.
About your group.
That's a good place to segue, because I've been going to the same flea market now for 3 years, and I've only missed a couple, and that's because it rained those weekends. And those weekends, I can still meet up with the people that run it. And like over time, I've developed relationships with the flea market, and I'm in the clothing category. And I think it's interesting. I've happened upon tons of cool vintage stuff, and Tech is really interesting, because I'll send him pictures. I'm in California, he's in Florida, so I'll send him pictures at 4 a.m, 7 over there. And even though it's pitch dark, he can tell me what it is. And I think it's amazing. Like, I found a Ralph Lauren Fireball pattern interior, and the had an Indian head exterior. It was like two grails on one piece, but it was a size small, weird piece. Anyway, he knew everything about it. And I feel like I didn't know people knew everything about everything. Like the fabric, the year, the tag, the graphic. It could be on this tag and it's worth this much. It could be on that tag and it's worth that much. This one is heavily faked, so you really got to be careful. There's so much stuff to really pay attention to, and I didn't know that people knew that. People can see it. People can touch it. People know, like, you know, I found some shirts from 01, and people told me to check for dry rot, and I'm like, that's not even that old. But
yeah,
lo and behold, there are shirts that are 15 years old that have dry rot. And all these things you don't know, you learn. And it's because they found a newer shirt. Tech found a Nickelback shirt that was not very old that had dry rot, like 06. And I was just like, wow, okay. So all these things that people are learning, the tags and the resources that people made, like trying to keep track of all this info is also insane. You meet people all the time that know so much.
Yeah, and that's a newer thing too. That's only been in the last 10 years, really, where that information's been out there, but now it's compiled in places that you can actually get it and absorb it. And, you know, it's kind of what you're saying about like niching down. So, I know from your history too, like I don't know exactly where you're at currently, but you started once you niche down originally, you were like women's clothing. Is that correct?
Yeah. So I started everything, and then maybe 5 years ago, I did women's clothing only. And occasionally, I'd pick up something random, but mostly women's clothing. And
how did that come? Like, why did you niche down to women's clothing? It just was the most successful for you?
It was the most available. So from the at the women's at my thrift stores in Northern California, I feel like it was 99% women's clothing when you walk in. There's a tiny men's section. And I feel like in Northern California, the sports fans are very subtle. And in Southern California, the sports fans are really in your face. So it's like, for some reason, the only thing I wasn't finding any Raiders gear. I wasn't finding any no sports stuff for men. I thought that was so unusual until I found out that Goodwill filters that out. So like they, of course, people do donate that. It's just part of what Goodwill pulls out of their cherry picking in the beginning. It doesn't make it to the thrift store. So I couldn't find any men's stuff. So I ended up picking women's stuff, and there was just so much of it. And a lady put me onto the flea market, and I was like, I cannot believe how much clothing there is here. And it's literally 90% or more of every single item here is women's clothing.
Yeah, it's crazy. And like, I bet everybody who's listening to this can relate to that. You know, when you go to a big Savers or a big Value Village, they're going to have racks of t-shirts, right? They're going to have racks of men's shirts. But if you go to like those smaller mom and pop thrifts, I swear they'll have one bar of men's, all mixed men's, and they'll have like 30 bars of female clothing. It's always like that. So like, it makes sense that you're saying that now, that that's where you would go with it. And again, there's probably... it's like a more intricate learning to understand female clothing. You have to know more about the brand, especially for a man doing it, right? Because if in my own company, I have like female pickers that pick the female stuff for us, for our stores, and they're like really up on fashion. You have to stay way more up on fashion to pick female quality clothing than for men, because you're like, we just wear sweats, tees, jeans, some jackets. But with female, it's like... it's a whole new world to learn. So like that, how did you figure it out? Because it's like a lot more in depth.
So I used to sell basically all women's clothing that I thought was valuable. I would just look it up. And one hack was I just looked at the big consignment shops, and they will update the list of the brands they consign. So I basically just said, okay, those are the brands I will sell, because they've already researched this, right? Even as going to local to like, most people have a Plato's Closet or a Buffalo Exchange or a clothes mentor or something local, and they will accept Target brand if it's on trend, and they'll actually turn down a good brand if it's off trend. Like, so just if you were to just go into one store and be like, what do you guys take? And they're like, every person that works there is an expert, because that's like literally when you go to apply, they say, do you love clothing? Yes. Okay. You can work here, because then we can show you how to run their cash register. But if you don't love clothing, it won't work. So they'll tell you all these things. And that's really how I learned, was I found out that you can go directly from the Goodwill bins to a Plato's Closet and cash out. And there are people who do that. They don't even sell online. There are people who full-time resell zero of it online. I thought, that totally changed my mind for women's clothing, because those shops are, you know, 80% female demographic.
Yeah, and that's correlated to the market as a whole. Like, women shop that much more than men shop, and they change their wardrobes more frequently. So I love that. Hack number one that you're learning on the show today is literally look up the list that Plato's Closet or Second Street or any of these big resellers or reseller stores are buying, and there you have your trendy list of brands. It's
you so can even easy. I mean, this sounds crazy, but you can just look at the big sellers and look at the brands they sell. I mean, this is like, so it seems obvious, right? But I didn't do that in the beginning. I just said, if it's profitable, I'll throw in my cart. And that's, you know, I'm opening myself up to all these problems that somebody else has probably already figured out.
Yeah, totally. And then you know, by doing that, you have a less of a sell-through, and you have more inventory to deal with and slower sales. And if you take the route of a little bit more research, then you can up that sell-through rate and make more money faster. That's what we all want to do.
Yeah, more money faster.
Got to interrupt the episode for a quick minute to bring you a word from our sponsor, Gem Search. You can find this app in the App Store, GEM Search. This app allows you to search the whole internet, all your favorite vintage websites, eBay, Amazon, Poshmark, Etsy, plus many, many more. F as in Frank's on there. You can submit your own website to be on this app. In one place, put in your keywords and it searches the whole internet, saving you so much time. I'm going to search for skate shirts right now because you know I love my vintage skates. Let's go. I'm going to put in vintage 80s skateboard t-shirt. Okay, let's see what pops up. Search it. Boom. Okay, it's actually pretty sick. Okay, I got, you see that? I got Pal Peralta right here. I got Vision Streetwear, GNS Vision, Vans, Hobie, all the long sleeve Bones Brigade for $2,000. Who's tripping on that price? I mean, maybe that's the rate. I got that tee. What else? More Bones Brigade. The C, you can get all your searches in one place, saving you so much time. I love these non-branded Skate California. All right, so guys, on the screen is the link here. Down below in the show notes is the link to Gem Search. You guys got to download the app. It's just going to save you time. We all have like our favorite searches that we're hitting all the time. Search them here. It gives you like the whole internet worth of results. That's all you need. They support the show, so you guys should support them. I appreciate it. Go download the app.
So I was doing women's clothing for a while, and then we can go to any part of the timeline, but about exactly a year ago, I got suspended on eBay. At one point, I had 28,000 items on eBay, and then as I was selling it down and learning how to do it properly, I actually started over maybe 2 years ago and built it back up to 8,000 items, and then I got suspended 1 year ago and switched to Whatnot. And Whatnot is live auction, and live auction is one of the oldest forms of reselling. It's just not usually online. But QVC and Home Shopping Network have been around for a long time, and this is just taking that concept and putting it on a mobile device for people. And in the last 5 years, I have learned so much about selling, psychology, and the attention to detail required to actually sell an item. Like, eBay itself has 1 billion items on there. Like, that's a lot of competition. How come some people are selling things quickly? Some people don't sell things at all. How come you can find a really cool item and put it on there and people can't even find it? Or you find a garbage item and you have it optimized and maybe it still sells because people can find it. So it's like there's so much to this. But as I narrowed down and I figured out that the women's clothing sector is very interesting because it's the most donated item. It's the most sold item online quantity-wise, not dollar-wise, but more women's clothing items sell than any other category. And they produce the most of it. So it's like, yes, it sells the most, but it also has the most. When they talk about the landfill problem, they're talking about women's fast fashion. It's not men's fast fashion that's causing the landfill problem. And all these sweatshops around the world, they're not making guys stuff.
Totally. Like, you got to think like Shein or whatever the other one is. Their percentage of sales is probably like 90-10 for women to men, right?
That's right. Yeah. Fashion Nova is probably the other big one.
Yeah, exactly.
Those two houses, they just make so much stuff, and whatever doesn't sell goes to the landfill or gets sold into liquidation sites. And then that right now, I do like partial of my business is the flea market and the other half is liquidation. And I've been doing liquidation now for a full year, and it has been so interesting doing buyouts. And we've crossed paths a couple of times, like with Vintage DS with John in the vintage world, like me doing a couple of buyouts of his stock. And he even has some stock now that this is one of those scenarios where he presented me with 8,000 tees. As a person, you had to think, okay, does this work? Does it not work? Is it going to flood the market? It's been really interesting looking at different stuff. And the fact that there's even vintage dead stock available is still kind of mind blowing to me. The fact that there is stuff that's 20 years old and new. Or 30 years old and new, or 50 years old and new. I mean, I know I'm talking to the vintage guy, but There's just, for me as a modern guy,
it's crazy. It gets less and less. It's like, it's not unlimited, you know?
Yeah.
We can't think with like such a small world mindset either. You got to think big, right?
Yeah.
And that question you're posing, will it flood the market, or like, how are we going to be able to move all this quantity?
Yep.
You know, it really depends what it is, but I think I see this a lot. Like, we're getting desensitized in the vintage world specifically because there's so much stuff being shown all the time.
Yep.
That like, it's hard to get excited about something, right? So I find myself like, I've always been, I wouldn't say I'm an everything seller, but as used clothing, like we specialize in vintage, but we'll sell whatever we can find. We've always been that way because we don't, like you, I'm sure, if you see something of value, you don't leave it behind. That's got value and you can make some money, right? So, I do think though people are getting desensitized to seeing everything so much, and it's hard to get people excited about anything anymore. And I think that's partly why the live platforms are killing and that whole boom happened, because now you're adding another level of excitement to something that otherwise has become less exciting by itself.
There's just too much of it. So if you can buy something from someone, that's the original word of mouth, right? So somebody tells you to go buy something, you do it. If you're following somebody you like, I followed one of your auctions and tried to buy one of your shirts the very first time. Like, I just feel like it's such a genuine connection, and I would rather have that story. Like, I bought it from this guy live is cooler than I bought it at the mall. And also, the mall is insanely expensive. Like a Hot Topic, you're paying $30 for a shirt that is on someone's live auctioning that same shirt for $6. It's interesting as a consumer. If you are involved with the vintage or used market at all, it's very hard to pay retail at the store because it's so sticker shocky.
Yeah, totally. I want to talk more about your live auctions, but we got to rewind to the timeline here.
Yep.
And I want to get the full story of this kicked off eBay, because that's like, you know, you browse by that fast, but that's a whole part of this.
It's a huge thing,
right?
Yep.
And, you know, myself, we've been on eBay on and off, some heavy times in the early days and then some less heavy times. And we've been kicked off so many times. I mean, we're I'm going to tell you right now, we've never been the best at customer service, but your kickoff was a little different, I think. And it was somewhat connected with like Nike, I believe. I don't really know the full story. So can you tell the whole story?
Definitely. I mean, this is it's very dramatic. I feel and on my YouTube channel, it's my highest viewed video, like why I was suspended. So essentially, I have a decent relationship with eBay. I've been talking about them on my YouTube channel for many years. I've been to headquarters. I've met a whole bunch of people. I've met the CEO. When I got suspended, they gave me the courtesy of a Zoom call, which I thought was insane. The Zoom call was at 8:55 in the morning, okay, which I already thought, okay, that's a very unusual time. People work 9 to 5. Why is my meeting at 8:55? And I already kind of guessed, wow, this meeting is going to be really short. How can I'm not even, they don't even give me the benefit of working during the work day. I'm like a, you know, whatever, I'm a spec. So anyway, 8:55, hop on. It's my, the eBay rep that's in charge of sellers. That person is there and I know him very well. And then also two lawyers, right? So I'm like, this is pretty intense already to begin with. So one lawyer is eBay's main lawyer. The other lawyer was the lawyer for managed payments. So if you guys have been on eBay for a while, they switched from having PayPal as their processor over to managed payments. So this is very interesting. This is April 2022. They are reviewing activity from January to November in 2021. Okay? This is interesting because when I got suspended, it was because of sneaker sales, and I had not sold a sneaker for 5 months. So this is very interesting because people will say, oh, I'll just sell this Montclair jacket and I'll sell it before eBay notices. That's not how it works. Like if you sell a Montclair jacket, they can still give you a violation after it's already sold. They can still suspend you. It's not like you can pull a fast one because all those records are permanent. So
is Montclair specific to like having issues or something?
Yeah, Montclair is a very popular, it's a super faked jacket.
Yeah.
So okay, people, will list one jacket for $800 that they got at Goodwill for four and it's clearly fake, and they'll quickly sell it for $60 and then they'll get suspended 3 days later when eBay reviews the solds. So I had an audit that happened between January and November, and they said, where did you get these shoes from? You need to send us invoices and we'll review the invoices. And I sent them the receipts from my bank because I was buying private collections via Zelle. So I had like a receipt from my friend, me selling him the thing. A lot of the sneakers that I sold, I sent through eBay's authentication service. So I had no issue with fakes. I had no issue with Nike. I think the reason why I got suspended was because managed payments, it's unusual activity. I was doing, basically I did 700K in clothes and 1.7 million in shoe sales. And the 700K in clothes was built over time, slowly grew it. And then the sneakers came out of nowhere. Just the first year I did 1.7 million. So during that time was when eBay transitioned to managed payments. And I feel like maybe they just didn't have time to review, but they don't like that type of activity. So what's shocking to me is that 5 months after the fact, I got suspended for that activity because it was unusual. And I wasn't the only one that got suspended for that type of activity. And also, it's just shocking to me because I got awards for selling that many sneakers, and I got, and I'm not going to reveal it, but I got a price contract with eBay that's lower than normal fees. So like, clearly somebody reviewed my account before they gave me a contract for lower fees, right? That's like a big deal. So I literally got a contract that says, don't tell anybody what your rate is, but you're going to pay less fees on eBay as long as you can maintain this volume. And I got that contract, and I still didn't sell shoes because it's not easy to acquire high-end collections. So I don't have any shoes to sell. So it's like a very strange thing, but my volume spiked so dramatically when I had sneakers, it basically tripled. And during that time,
did eBay not like when you showed them your bank records, you explained everything, there was just a unanimous decision that we don't believe
it's not true provenance. Like, it's not an authorized distributor saying, hey, we sent Chris 10 pairs of this, 10 pairs of this, 8 pairs of this, we're authorized to sell this stuff, here you go. And now I actually have that for the stuff that I sell. Everything is invoiced, because once you start doing like 100,000 a month, everybody starts paying attention. Like, is this person legit? Where are they getting their goods?
Yeah.
So now everything I have is invoiced, and it's just shocking to me that they literally reviewed me the entire time and they didn't hold any funds. Usually when you're a bad guy, they'll like hold funds, or you have to have a, hold time or something. I didn't have anything. They never held any of my money for longer than the review period, which is like 24, 48 hours. And they hadn't done anything since for like 6 months. I really was shocked by the suspension. I still think that eventually one day I will get reinstated. I've had multiple people tell me that any suspension can be reversed, but not any way to appeal. So I'm trying to figure out, do I have to wait for people to not work there anymore? I don't know exactly what the holdup is, but also I'm very public. So it's very odd. Nothing illegal. I had top rated seller status. I've never been below standard. I've never been kicked off for bad customer service or not shipping or anything. So I had a 0.3% defect rate, which is like 3 out of 1,000 people are unhappy. I had zero issues with those sneakers. I had one inauthentic shoe claim because this is so wild to me. I put a listing new without box for a pair of Kevin Durant's, and it got rejected for fake box. And I'm like, bro, there wasn't even a box. I put no box on the listing. And so I understand that's one of the things that they use to authenticate an item. It should have said no box is the reason why we can't authenticate it, but they said fake box, even though there was no box. So it's such a funny, like, I don't know how they authenticate their items, but it's just,
well, there must be some sort of like, it's not, I mean, you'd think that there's a person looking at everything, but then there must be some, but there still must be some algorithms that it runs through before it gets to the person or something.
Must be. So I had that, That's the only defect I had in the sneaker. And the other one was I sent somebody a size 11 and he ordered a size 12. And somehow it still got to the buyer. And the buyer was like, what kind of program are you guys running that I'm not even getting the right size? Like, I ordered a 12 and I got an 11. How'd this pass authentication? So he was really mad. So that was the only, but nothing really happened. They sent the shoes back to eBay headquarters. They gave that guy a refund and they didn't even take my payment. They let me keep the money because they said, we don't know if the shoes got swapped or we don't know what happened on our end. But
so to deal sneakers on eBay, yep. To deal sneakers on eBay, you have to send them through the headquarters to get authenticated, then pushed forward.
Yep.
It's kind of like the way StockX does it.
Yep. It's like the way StockX does it. And eBay dropped the ball on clothing and sneakers, in my opinion, because if they had done a good job, there would be no Grailed. There would be no Vinted. There would be no Poshmark. There'd be no StockX if eBay just did a really good job. eBay got known for selling fakes.
Yeah, totally.
They could have done the authentication. They could have done the authentication back in the day when there was Nike Talk. There was no other sites. 100%
yeah, totally.
Of it was sold on eBay, so I feel like they totally dropped the ball on keeping that market because all these companies are just subdivisions of what eBay did.
So, what you know, when you're saying you did 1.7 million in that year of sneakers, what would be your margin on those average? Can you say that?
Quick intermission to the show. Hope you guys are enjoying what you're hearing. Hoping you're enjoying the conversation. Just wanted to give you a quick reminder that if you want the full 2-hour episodes instead of just the 45-minute free version, go jump on the Patreon or sub down below. And voila, you will have it. 2 hours of educational entertainment. We're filling your brain with the knowledge to be successful in the game, keeping you entertained while you're probably listing items on eBay or hunting at the thrift or digging at the bins or listing items on Poshmark or whatever the hell you do. Do it with the 2-hour version. Jump on the Patreon or sub down below. Thank you guys.
10%. Pretty low, actually, I think, for that kind of risk. But all these sneakers were selling pretty much instantly to people I already know. In 2007, when I was doing the sneaker game, I met a ton of sneaker people because my friend bribed his way into all the stores. He'd be like, hey, this is my first time to the store. Who's in charge? And they'd be like, oh, that's the manager back there. And he'd be like, hey, here's a brand new iPhone. Can you let me know when the shipments come in? Because I'm curious what comes in. I'm a flipper. And I'd never seen that kind of thing before. So because of my friend, I met a whole bunch of people in the sneaker industry. So the reason why I was selling my sneakers through eBay, and I think this is no surprise to anyone, is because for a while they had no fees. So I did $1.7 million worth of sales on eBay with zero fees. And the only reason I could do that, even sell these shoes, is because of that. If I had to pay the eBay fee, I wouldn't have made any margin. Because people with high-end collections only want all the money. So it's like, they want $100 for it, and it's worth $100. How do you get paid from that? So essentially, I was able to negotiate a 10% spread, but that was just normally the fees. Normally, when you sell something for somebody for $100, you give them $85. In this scenario, though, this is crazy. They didn't even charge a processing fee. I'd sell a shoe for $100 and get $100 in my bank account. They did not charge anything. They were so desperate for sales. And this is the part that is really shocking
to me. But why? Do you think that eBay, that had something to do with the cancellation? Because they were like, somebody fucked up in giving you that deal?
Well, the thing is, like, they're so desperate for sneaker sales that they wanted me to continue.
Sellers. They're trying to acquire more sneakers, acquiring sellers and buyers.
And so when I didn't sell sneakers anymore, maybe they were like, oh, it's because they were charging fees now. So this guy doesn't want to sell anymore. So let's give him a special deal. But I didn't have any more shoes to sell. So like and plus I can't compete with bots, people who know how to go to the sneaker app and get 30 pairs of Yeezys, I mean 30 pairs of Travis Scott's. I don't know how to do that. So it's not like waiting in line anymore. And I don't have infinite money like my friend with the Air Max. So I can't bribe my way into the backdoor deals. So I only can sell what my friends had, and I only made money because there was no fees. This model can never be replicated again unless there was a no fee situation.
Yeah, that's crazy. Such a wild experience. So because there's so much labor. Like you know, for that 10%, you're working. You're putting
I'm
in
working.
Work. You're paying
working.
Your employees. You know, everyone's. That's a lot of listings you probably had to do.
A lot of
shipping and a lot of everything.
Everything, and I feel like. I don't know. I'm a little bit salty that that they were not able to reinstate me. I understand being suspended because of high volume and it's unusual, but how could I'm so public? I don't get how you can't investigate it. If I had done something illegal, I would be in jail. Who would be public on YouTube selling stolen stuff? That makes zero sense, right? And they wouldn't been totally. They wouldn't have done it 5 months later. I think that somebody at Managed Payments was reviewing the previous year and wow, this is super sketchy, unusually high activity. And he's not buying from East Bay or Nike or the outlet. Where are these sneakers coming from? So we don't want this person on our platform.
Too much volume. Yeah. You know, Managed Payments, I guess, is how old is Managed Payments now? 3 years?
A couple years.
Couple years. It's a pretty new thing. And it's basically eBay taking control of their own payment system, which used to be 100% PayPal. And I guess they wanted to, that the only reason they did that is because they wanted to take away the fees that PayPal was making on their sales, correct? Yep.
And they make a lot more money when they process their own payments.
Yeah, which, you know, I don't know how everybody else feels about it, but it was a pain in the ass when that switched. It's just made everything more complicated. You get your money slower. How do you feel about managed payments?
Well, one more part of that was, you know, when in the days of PayPal, you would get your money and you had your PayPal debit card. You could use your money immediately. Somebody buys something for $100, you could go use that money. You could even drop ship and go buy the item with that money. Now it takes a couple of days for it to go through eBay system. And a lot of people didn't like that delay. But I will say something that people don't appreciate enough, which is with managed payments, eBay can charge the buyer with an offer. Before, people used to complain, how come when I accept an offer, I can't immediately charge them? And that's because they didn't control the payment. So all these new websites that came up, they say if you're making this offer, it's binding. If the seller accepts, we will charge your credit card. But eBay didn't have that.
That's not across the board. I've accepted offers that don't get paid.
It's not across the board, and it's still transitioning, but eventually it will be. Eventually it will be. Every offer is binding, and they will attempt to charge the credit card.
Yeah, that'll be great.
When it's accepted, which is going to happen. There's no way to do that when you have PayPal processing your stuff. So I can see the idea behind it. Also, what changed with managed payments is they do fee netting, which means eBay took their fees out before they give you the money. And back in the day, people were always messed up when their eBay bill came at the end of the month.
Yeah, that's also a bonus. That was a pain in the ass when you get paid.
And now nobody notices because they take the money out first. So, and people I used to love paying my credit card, using my credit card to pay those eBay fees and rack up those points. But that's another reason why they make a lot more money, because they don't have to accept the credit card processing on those fees. They just get the money without fees. So,
and they probably had a lot of defunct bills that people didn't pay and just went off the platform after selling a bunch of shit.
Absolutely. Sell 10 things and disappear. So that they didn't have to chase people down for $20 80,000 times.
Yeah.
So
crazy story. And obviously at the end of this happens, you're trying to fight it. You're probably in some sort of panic mode for your business and your family. I know you're a family man. You have kids?
I have two kids.
Two kids. Awesome.
So when this happened, I guess people were kind of shocked at how non-panicky I was, but it's because I had already, I've been doing this podcast with Tech and Sports for a long time. We actually did this podcast in 2017. And in 2017, he told me that when you're doing multiple things, you can't let one ship sink. So he's like, if you want to do YouTube and eBay, YouTube and eBay have to always be good. In case one drops down, the other one will take care of you, or one disappears. So it's okay if one of them stays the same, but it's not okay if one of them dips. So I notice this with a lot of creators. Sometimes their social media, their podcast, or their YouTube's on fire, and then their reselling dips. Or their reselling really gets really good, and then their social media dips because they're working on one instead of the other one. But I've been lucky because I learned that a long time ago to be consistent with everything. So when I got suspended on eBay, I was already doing $30,000 a week on Whatnot. I was already making six figures on Whatnot before I got suspended on eBay, which is so bizarre, the timing, because I didn't want to do Whatnot. And I was like, nah, I'm good. I'll just do one platform, eBay. And then I asked, this is really wild, but I asked Tekken Sports for a referral. So he's the one that actually got me on the Whatnot. So he threw me a huge bone. I got on the Whatnot. It matches my personality really well because you get to talk to your audience as you're selling items. And I already had the supply chain going. So when I got suspended on eBay, I didn't lose any of my suppliers. And oddly, when I got suspended, I got a huge amount of publicity. And like, Drew, this is the strangest thing in the world. You get suspended, which is supposed to mean you're like a shady person and shouldn't do business with you. But like my business contacts like 10x'd because of that. Everyone was like, I want to sell you my stuff because you can move millions of dollars worth of stuff. So I want to sell all my stuff to you. That's how I met John. John is a local vintage t-shirt seller. I bought 40,000 t-shirts from him after I got suspended. So it was like, this is like a weird situation where if you can prove that you can move volume, it's like everyone is just waiting in line to work with you. And I felt that was just a weird situation where I got suspended and my income didn't change.
Yeah, well, good for you. And I think it's important to eventually you do this long enough, you're in business long enough that you realize that like you can't let, no matter how big the problem is, you can't let it tank you. You can't let it like shake your core enough to like fuck you up. You got to be like, you got to almost like expect that those things are coming eventually and be prepared that you can still maintain composure in the face of whatever's going to happen, and you adapt, you move, you change, and believe that it's going to work out because it does. Like, unless you're going to... You know, you know your own personality, you know your work ethic, you know you're not going to end up going bankrupt. You know you'll figure it out. You just have to believe that, not let it disrupt you too much, and get on with it and figure it out. And obviously, you already had something in motion that was there for you.
This is interesting, Drew, because when I started the podcast, I learned that you could get hit by a bus, right? Because I actually never really thought about that. But if you get hit by a bus, does your family just call Goodwill and they come by and pick up everything? Because do they even know how to resell all the stuff that you have? And what happens to all your employees and what goes on? So when I got suspended, I had employees, I had rent, I had a family, like all that stuff is in place. But I kind of already been thinking about that. So now on Whatnot, I'm doing around $40,000 a week. It's possible I lose my Whatnot account at some point, although I'm not in violation of anything except for I would say that my rating of 4.8 out of 5 could be improved, but I don't think I'm going to get suspended for having a 4.8 instead of a 4.9. But I think that I'm expecting one day for it to end. So I'm already thinking about what to do, and the supply chain is the most important part of reselling. And people are going to ask, how do you make relationships? How do you meet people? How do people at the flea market work with you? How do you meet people at the thrift store? And I think it's just consistency and going. It's not the answer that people want to hear. But like when it's raining, I'll get a text from the flea market people saying, if you go, I'll go. And I'll go out there in the middle of the rain and still figure it out. Because if they know you're reliable, they're going to save all the good stuff for you. And so that's paid. It's almost like, I was just thinking about this. Just my flea market deals. If I just got those deals and flipped it to resellers, I was still make enough money to live, even not being selling online at all. And that's just the reselling part. And then YouTube, I've been making videos consistently since 2017. We've done this podcast for 2.5 years, and I've only missed one episode because I had a baby that day. And that day, I had a baby, we had a backup podcast. So the podcast didn't miss, but I missed. And I learned, you know what? That's insane. 2.5 years of our podcast where we always joke that we say the same thing every week. But really, we're just telling people, like, you just need to be consistent. We didn't do anything different than any of the other podcasts, except for we don't miss a week. So people are like, wow, I want to be around these guys.
I can contest that that is freaking hard to do because I miss times all the time. Like I go through like you were saying before, like these like peaks and valleys of it. I'll be like really good on it for a long time and then it'll go down and then I'll be really good on it for a while. I'm trying to be more consistent, you know, and I think with business too, like we've always had multiple baskets.
Yep. Right?
You always have like multiple streams of revenue and sometimes one falls off. Like we had one fall off recently and we're like, okay, like let's make up that revenue in another channel now that we have these other things. And we wouldn't be able to handle that one falling off if we didn't have the other channels already run.
100%.
You know, and I always think about that because it's like your safety net. But then I also think about that whole, like that's the theory of don't put all your eggs in one basket, right?
Yep.
But then there's like this other side of that theory where it's like go all in with one thing, which also can produce like a lot of success for people, right?
Sure.
But I guess that just comes with more risk, you know, and then it can get pulled from you like your eBay had.
Yeah, 100%. I just think that they can't take your skills away from you. Like, I feel like if I lose my whatnot, I lose my YouTube channel and I lose my podcast and I have to start over and become a plumber. It's all right. Like it doesn't translate very well because I need to get under the sink and fix stuff. And that's not related to taking photographs or talking, but I think I would be like, okay, what did the best plumbers do? I got to start over. You know, I'm going to be basically staring at somebody's ass for 2 years because I got to learn how to do this shit. And then I can start making some basic money and then I can start my own plumbing company, but it's going to be a minute.
Totally. You know, I also think like what you do, you have built all these skills in reselling, but take reselling out of it. You've also built like insane marketing skills.
Yep.
You have like, you've learned all these other things to make your reselling business successful. So you could like, I think for myself, and I would say this translate to you too. It's like, you could go into marketing.
Yep.
You could go and like be like a marketing exec at like a big company and be like, I'll show you how to fucking go grassroots and sell all your shit. You know what I mean? Because you've done it. So it does translate. And again, like that's back to like investing in yourself, just like how people do with your group. It's like pay a bit of money to learn the things and like put the time in, because once you have that knowledge and you have those skills, they're there for the rest of your life.
All right, everybody. Thank you. Hope you really liked what Chris Daly-Refineman had to say. Hope you liked our conversation as much as I liked recording it and having it with him. If you are wanting to continue on your educational journey listening to this podcast, please go jump on the Patreon. Again, it's $5. It's $1.25 per episode. Or you can sign up right below and sub to this YouTube channel. And the full version of the video, the full 2-hour video will be on there, as it will be on the Patreon. And if you listen to audio versions of this show, then you'd want to go on the Patreon because there is a video and audio on the Patreon, and on YouTube is just the video. And that is it. If you want to shop F as in Frank Vintage, all this wicked stuff, go do so. FasInFrankVintage.com. Drop a code down below in the show notes. Also, if you want a chance to win $100 store credit to FasInFrankVintage.com, we're dropping like 4 times a week, guys. New product goes live 4 times a week. Then you need to tell us what's your favorite vintage score of all time and how you found it down in the comments. That's it. Very simple. And I guess that's it for this week. You can catch me live on the Easy App, EZZE Live in the App Store every Wednesday at 7 p.m. And you can check out my eBay, guys. Go search F as in Frank in the eBay store. I'll put the eBay link down in the show notes too. And you can see what kind of stuff we're selling on eBay. And you can see what we've learned from the group with Tech and Sport and Daily Refinement and see how that's going. And check out my eBay and bid on stuff. We're accepting all reasonable offers on eBay. Link down below. Enough of that. Got a great guest lined up for you guys next week. See you back here very soon. Get on the Patreon and support. Much love to everybody.